Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host, Alfred Adisk, and James Corbett of The Corbett Report will be here right after the first segment of today's program. So let's get started with the crazy markets that we're experiencing after the election 2 days ago for Thursday, November 10th, 2016. We're going to focus on some financial news today. Of course, a lot of it is all based around Mr. Trump. We have some reports first that I'd like to talk about. You had the Dow Jones Industrial Average. It hit another record high today. Copper posted its biggest back-to-back surge in 3 years. And alongside of it was gaining. You had lead, zinc, and aluminum. We haven't seen any follow-through with gold as yet, but we will. In the aftermarket, gold, New York spot price, down 22 today at $1,257 down 22. Silver, though, was up 0.05 at $1,861. Most of these this numbers for gold and silver started to go heading down, probably around 3:30. Silver was much higher most of the day, holding around the 1885 level, and it just recently came back down to this 1861 level right before the markets closed. Platinum was down 28 at 976. Palladium up 12 at 693. The USDX today, I didn't have a chance to see where that was at. Up 23 at 98.81. Crude oil was down 0.76 at 45.51. And let's get to those paper markets today. You had the Dow up triple digits again, once again. You had the Dow up 218 points, 18,808. The NASDAQ didn't fare as well. It was down 42, but still 5208. The S&P was up 4, 2,167. The 10-year yield continues to climb, 2.12%, up 0.05. The euro, of course, was down 109. And Japan and Hong Kong, pretty much, Japan was down over 5% today, the day before. It reversed itself. London, pressure on London and Germany, which I was a little surprised to see considering the strength in all the other markets around the world. So I still expect to see gold reverse itself here shortly. I think we still had a 1250 that it will test, and the reason I believe it will turn around is because the only thing you read, every article that I read about the financial news and so forth, it's all about inflation. So gold will respond. I know some of the mining shares, they got hit pretty hard. Newmont Mining today was down a little over 6%. But I actually have some good news in a particular gold coin that I'll talk to you prior to leaving this first segment before Al and James come on. So let me get to what I want to talk about today. Again, we will see the follow-through on gold. And we'll have to see where, and we'll see how low gold will go. But I still expect to see 1250 as a bottom. We did have the dollar rise against most of its peers. You had government bonds. They're extending their sell-off. And again, inflation. Everyone is betting on faster and higher inflation. They are betting that with Trump and a Republican-controlled Congress, we will have lower taxes, it'll ease corporate regulation, and ramp up spending to spur the world's largest economy. A statement posted on his official transition website, so the new administration will replace Dodd-Frank Act financial sector law with pro-growth policies. And as a side note, you know, Dodd-Frank gets blamed a lot for our slow economy. That law created 5 new regulatory agencies and effects a profound increase in regulation on the financial services. So bye-bye to Dodd-Frank. Well, sometimes you do have to have regulation. I mean, that's what got everyone into the problem with the derivatives and the subprime lending. But even with the Dodd-Frank Act, we still have subprime lending going on, so we're not so sure how good those regulations were. It stifled the economy, but that seems to, it will at least be replaced with some pro-growth policies. And as we know, Trump has pledged to cut taxes and boost spending on infrastructure by as much as $500 billion. His proposals... Now, this is from the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. They estimated that his proposals would increase the debt by $5.3 trillion. Definitely inflationary and definitely good for gold. So, people, what we're seeing now, I think what we're seeing in the markets, what we're seeing around the world, traders are going through the possibilities about what Washington looks like today and what it's going to look like tomorrow. And these people, they're always going to Washington to see what it can or it can't do for them. John Manley, who helps oversee about $233 billion as chief equity strategist for Wells Fargo, says corporations feel there's a less restrictive hand. People may take that as a positive. And I think that's what we're seeing in the stock markets. Corporations are taking it as a positive. You know, they're looking at lower taxes and less regulations to perhaps they can expand and create jobs. Federal Reserves, they're going to do a rate increase in December. If the markets stay this strong, there's absolutely no reason why they wouldn't, not with all their great little reports that they fudged prior to the election for Hillary. So if they don't readjust those numbers and they stay with those numbers and the stock markets stay as strong as they are, yeah, they're going to increase the rates in December, come a quarter point. And that is their meeting is December 13th and 14th meeting. So we have that to look forward to. Investors from PIMCO, the Pacific Investment Management Company, they see a surge in long-term U.S. Treasury yields as a sign of inflation will be on the rise. This is good for gold. So again, folks, the reason I talk about this, and I'm just as excited as everyone else is out there with the hope that things are going to change in Washington, and I do believe they're going to change, but I do believe we still have a financial system that is a problem, and by tacking on. I don't care how you do it. You know, if you create government bonds to you know, fund the infrastructure projects, it still has to be paid for. So there's a lot of things that I don't see as positive for our monetary system. Therefore, we're going to have inflation, and gold will protect your purchasing power as a hedge against inflation. That's just one of the benefits that gold will do. Just like we give the examples of a man's business suit that you could buy in 1950, you can still buy the same suit today with the same amount of money priced in gold. So it protects your purchasing power. And the Federal Reserve remains to be seen whether she'll be replaced prior to her. I think she's actually in office until 2018. So we'll have to see what Mr. Trump does there. But what's interesting is, you know, here we are. Trump hasn't even taken office yet. He did meet Obama today. He went to, and I would have loved to have been a fly on that wall. But we're already seeing a positive difference. You're seeing positive energy being created. And it really is amazing how a man, a president-elect, can make these leaders around the world try to make everyone forget what they said prior to the election. They are scared of Trump and what he's going to do for this country with his election, what effect it will have on their country. So again, you're going to see them all come back, you know, because they, again, they all know where their bread is buttered. The Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, he said today that he was willing to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement. So already he has, it's going to be two against one. As you all remember, that NAFTA, Trump called, was the worst trade deal the United States has ever signed. Clinton signed it, but it really was created by the Bush administration. But Clinton did sign it. So this is important. And Trudeau says he thinks it's important that we be open to trading, to talk about trade deals. Trudeau loves free trade. Now, free trade is a lot different than fair trade. I believe Mr. Trump believes in fair trade. And Trudeau continues to say if the Americans want to talk about NAFTA, he is more than happy to talk about it. He said, adding that it was important to periodically reassess trade deals to ensure that they continue to be a benefit to the Canadians. Well, you know, we know Canada is having a little bit of problems too. So again, here comes a another leader of a country and willing to do whatever is necessary to help his own country. But that's the way the world works. Remember Mr. Farage? Remember he did a little bit of campaigning, or he was at the Republican convention. I believe he was the first Briton ever to attend the Republican convention. Mr. Farage recently said, and he was a major force behind Brexit. He said in a radio interview, he called Obama a creature, a loathsome individual who couldn't stand our country, meaning Britain. And I'm not so sure Obama could stand this country either. But look, Mr. Farage goes on. He says, what was interesting was that Trump said we'd be at the front of the queue, the line. He said on this radio interview, listeners bear this in mind, however imperfect Donald Trump may be, and he is, and he was kidding about how his mother was Scottish, that he spent a lot of time in his country. He says he loves our country, what we stand for, and our culture. But then this is where it gets interesting. He says this is a big opportunity, and he was being interviewed over there. This is a big opportunity for all British business, because once we left that awful EU thing, we could do our first trade deal with the United States of America. He says, isn't that great? He says, all these dreadful people who work hand in glove with Goldman Sachs and everybody else have made themselves rich, and they have ruined our countries. He says he he couldn't be happier, and neither can I. So it was kind of interesting. Today, Mr. Trump got to meet with the creature, as Mr. Farage has affectionately termed Obama, on Thursday today. And, of course, they were nice to one another. But they did have a meeting, just the two of them. And I would have loved to have been a little fly on that wall. I can only imagine what was traded. And I think whenever you have a private, I guarantee you Obama was probably asking Trump not to go after Hillary, just to kind of leave her alone and not to put her in jail. But we'll see. We'll see. Another reason we should be thankful that Mr. Trump was elected and not Hillary. This is from, I can't remember what, Natural News, I believe. And it was, everybody, supporters of Clinton thought that Hillary actually believed in supporting women and children and immigrants and humanity. But in the real world, she was an obedient pawn of the most evil, genocidal corporate entities on the planet. And had she had seized the White House, she would have ushered in an agricultural apocalypse that let powerful agrochemical corporations like Monsanto, and they are soon to merge with Bayer, poison our planet, our food, our children with cancer-causing chemicals. And Clinton was tight with Monsanto. She was also a favorite pick for Big Pharma and the chemical medication industry that continues to prey upon the endless disease to generate massive corporate profits. We talk about this all the time, the corporate profits of these big pharma on Wednesdays when Wendy Wilson joins us from Apothecary Herbs. So all of these pharmaceutical companies were counting on Clinton and hoping that they were guaranteed another 4 to 8 more years of profits as Americans suffered and dies from cancer, diabetes, and other diseases. I wanted to do a comparison. Here's some good news about gold. Tomorrow we'll talk about Lisbon. We'll talk about robots and artificial intelligence. GM to lay off another 2,000 workers at two U.S. plants. We'll talk about that tomorrow. I wanted to get this through. I wanted to know how some of my $20 gold pieces were performing with this big hit on spot gold. So I went back. Someone called for pricing, and I had originally quoted them back on September 6th. So I thought, well, while I was quoting the same coins, I would do a comparison with today and when he had initially requested the price quote on his Mint State 64 $20 gold pieces. And I was actually pleasantly surprised because I wasn't really following the 64 $20 Liberty so closely. Back on September 6th, spot gold was $1,343. Today, when I did this comparison, gold was still at $1,267. That's, in 2 months, we saw gold drop in price of $76. The Mint State 64 $20 Liberty gold piece increased by $90. I did this comparison yesterday, and I pulled up the prices today to just see, because I figured that, they probably would have went down a little bit. But that Mint State 64 $20 gold piece, even though we have gold down $22, or not that much earlier in the day, was still up $5. What does that tell me? Tell me there's incredible purchasing going on in these coins. They're a limited supply. They're a beautiful coin, $20 gold piece. Liberty, Mint State 64, and supply and demand. So demand is strong, supply is limited, therefore the price has gone up. A tremendous buy, and I do have that on special today. And the special on that today is going to be $1,840. This also includes a free Silver Eagle along with the Christmas container that the Silver Eagle comes in. It includes your shipping costs, and the total is $1,840. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. James and Mr. Corbett, or I should say Alfred and James, will be here with you in just a few short minutes.
We will find you acting on your best
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. And our guest is James Corbett, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, from thecorbettreport.com, talking about all things economic and geopolitical and sometimes even humane. I saw that you had an article that you had that you just published. I have the wrong script here in front of me. Hang on just a second. There we go. You printed an article just lately that only love can defeat the New World Order. Now that's kind of strange. I mean the title. Are you wearing flowers in your hair or anything like that?
Not so well. If I had hair, maybe I would. But no, certainly not. I hope it does strike people as a strange sentiment, because I hope it is in 180 degree complete sharp contrast to everything that people are hearing and experiencing from all of the media, mainstream, alternative, and otherwise, which I have noted, and I talked about just last week on the Corbett Report. I did an episode on You Are Being Programmed to Hate, where I've talked about the hatred and the vitriol and the division and the scorn and the rancor that is being increased and ratcheted up, that I think we all feel, I think we've all seen come bubbling up to the surface, especially during this 2016 selection cycle. And I want to stand in 180 degree complete contrast to that. I want to be on the other side of that fence, not talking about hatred and division and scorn and how you can be at war with your neighbor, but how people can overcome that tendency. And I hope it's not pie-in-the-sky, flowery rhetoric that means nothing. I hope there's something to it, because otherwise we will be divided and ruled.
You know, I watched the election yesterday from 8 o'clock at night until 3 o'clock in the morning, or whenever Trump finally accepted and stopped speaking and whatever. One of the things that impressed me about it, I happen to be a Trump supporter, or at least a Hillary, you know, antagonist. I watched people in the Trump audience who were deeply wounded, in the Hillary audience that were deeply wounded when she lost. They were crying. They looked to me just like Trump supporters. And it kind of surprised me, because the only thing I've been hearing is how vicious and violent and criminal the people that are involved in the Trump or in the Hillary campaign were. And it turns out that the supporters, I was surprised to see, they look just like me. Right? I didn't see that to be true. I didn't see viciousness, violence, and the rest of that. I was kind of surprised. But I was also surprised to hear them complaining about Trump supporters as being vicious and violent. Huh? And I thought, wait a second, you don't get it. And it is amazing to me how little the Hillary supporters understand about the Trump supporters, and apparently how little the Trump supporters understand about the Hillary supporters. It has been a real polarizing election. There has been great division, just as you pointed out in your article about there will be a divided U.S. public that hates the other half as a consequence of the Trump election. Or I think you meant it as a consequence of the Trump election. And you don't think we're going to heal that anytime soon?
Well, I mean, that's up to us, ultimately. And it's up to people having insights and epiphanies like you just had, because it is a surprising phenomenon to see people on the other side of that fence being similar to yourself. How could that possibly be? We are almost being taught that it's almost like a different species. This is a different class of human being. This isn't like you or me. And I mean, there's so much irony here, and I have to admit, there's Schadenfreude that comes along with this to see the hypocrisy. But this is the way that I contextualize this, because I've been doing the Corbett Report now since 2007. So I started in the Bush era, strongly against Bush and everything he was doing. So I was used to being called a left-wing pinko commie by the right-wingers and being loved and embraced by people on the left side of the equation. And then on January 20th, 2009, I suddenly became this right-wing fascist, literally Hitler, and people on the left couldn't understand why I wasn't enthused about hope and change Obama style, and suddenly people on the right thought that I was a sane and reasonable person. And hey, it looks like that pendulum is going to swing again. So what does this mean politically? I mean, just look at one example of this that I thought was particularly striking, and I think it encapsulates so much of what we're seeing right now. It's an article up on Slate.com, obviously a heavily left-leaning outlet, I believe part of the Washington Post group. And they wrote this article just a few hours after the election, at 2:38 a.m. on November 9th. It's worse than you think. Donald Trump assumes the office of the presidency at the peak of its imperial powers and unhindered by the drag of divided government, where they say, so now we have a president-elect with authoritarian tendencies assuming a presidency that has never been more powerful. Over the course of the past 20 years, we have invested ever more authority in the executive branch of government. We have given presidents the power to launch war without congressional consent, and we have given them the power to rewrite the crucial details of domestic policy without any legislative stamp of approval. We rarely worried about investing the presidency with such latitude. It seemed a rational response to legislative gridlock, the only way to keep the country moving, and it seemed reasonable to believe that the considerable power of the presidency would be wielded by a person who respected the Constitution and the norms of American government. Translation: all of those powers that we loved under Obama, we will now hate under Trump, and we will love once again, once it is a Democrat, once again in office in 4 to 8 to 12, whatever, however many years. How ridiculous. How saddening. What an indictment of the entire system that it works time and time and time again, that you get half of the public seeing the real problem, seeing what's really going on, seeing that what they have been doing was a mistake, and it will just swing back and forth. The pendulum will continue to swing left to right. The left will be awake. The right will be asleep. The right will be awake. The left will be asleep. And all the time, government powers continue to expand. So every time that happens, every time there is a pendulum swing, I think a few more people fall through those cracks. A few more people see the system for what it is. And this is the moment. This is the moment where we might have a chance at reaching out to some of those leftists who supported everything under Obama to maybe see why that isn't a good idea and why we shouldn't do that. But it's a small window of opportunity for before people launch into the hatred. Just hate anything Trump and then love anything your team does. Uh-huh. So we have to break through this conditioning. And this is the kind of moment of opportunity to seize that.
Does the problem you're describing have anything to do with the statement that those don't learn from history or are destined to repeat it? I mean,
it's even more fundamental than that, though, isn't it? Because it's not, yes, it is that, but it's not just that people aren't learning from it, it's that there is that mental block, that it is such an effective mental block that this is my team. And anything my team does is by definition good, yep. And anything on the other team is by definition bad. And that's going to play out extremely interestingly over the next few months and years, because I have a fairly strong suspicion, and hey, I don't have a crystal ball, but I have a fairly strong suspicion that Donald J. Trump is not going to be is not going to govern the way anyone is expecting him to govern. A lifelong Democrat with Democrat tendencies, I don't think he is actually going to be the incredible right-wing Bush on steroids that people
the
on the left...
The great right hope? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, yeah, exactly. I don't think it's going to be like that. I think there's going to be some big surprises in store for everyone. And one example of this, what were the very first words to come out of President-elect Donald J. Trump? Was it lock her up? Yay! You know, now we can do all of those things we talked about on the campaign trail. No, it was, I'd like to thank Hillary Clinton for her service to the country, and she fought a great campaign, and we should all say a sincere thank you to her.
I understand.
I hope that people who supported Donald J. Trump for whatever reasons they were supporting will take a good look at what is about to happen and the things he is about to do, and look at them honestly. Not convince yourself that just because I voted for this team and this team is now in power, whatever they do is good. Look at what actually happens and be honest about it. That's all I can say to people who are on board the Trump train right now. Just be honest about what's about to happen, because I'm pretty sure there's going to be some promises reneged on. Let's put it that way.
There's a question of who's really pulling this train. Is it Donald Trump? Is he the big engine that's pulling this train? Or is it all of the people that were fed up with the establishment that said, we're going to back this guy? Is this a populist movement, or is this a Trump movement?
It is 100% a populist movement. It was the people. This is a genuine and authentic expression of a lot of people who are absolutely fed up with the status quo in every sense. The mainstream media, the politicians, the business corporate complex. This is a genuine populist movement and a genuine expression of that. And Trump is just the figurehead of that. And that's what, I mean, almost every Trump supporter that I've interacted with, that is the way they frame their support for him. It's, yeah, he lies and, you know, whatever, he has corruption and he's not going to be perfect, but it is a big middle finger to the establishment. I get that. And I, in some ways, that is very healthy. That needs to happen. But once again, if people get caught up in the politics of this and start supporting the man instead of the movement, then the movement is lost. And I think this
is lost, or does it just sit back and fume for another few years until they get another shot at the White House? Or
in
maybe
some ways
even
that's,
at Congress or the
right,
Senate.
Right. Well, that's true. But in some ways, that's even more depressing, because all that does is further reaffirm in the minds of all of these people that the only outlet that you have for effecting change in the world is to wait for your time to vote. You have to wait for the next election cycle, and then you can vote in another person who promises to do what you want them to do, and then they'll renege on that promise, and then you get to vote for another person who etc., etc. I mean, I get why 20-somethings get caught up in this and really believe in it. I am flabbergasted that people who have seen this happen over and over and
this
over again their
different.
Entire lives
yep.
truly believe in the bottom of their core of their heart that this time it's different. I just, yep. I can't imagine why they believe that.
Well, a certain amount of hope. I don't know. It is, it's, you know, what fools these mortals be. That's one thing for sure. And it has to even bewilder the politicians. They know they can fool us time and time and time again, but there's got to be a point where even they get kind of sick of it. Wouldn't they rather have an electorate who demanded politicians that were honest and had some measure of real integrity and not just telling us what we want to hear?
Well, personally, I'd rather not think of people as an electorate. I'd like to think of them as people who are individual human beings who can interact with the world and affect change in all sorts of ways that have nothing to do with the federal government or what the President of the United States will or will not do by executive fiat. And until I think that shift in consciousness and understanding takes place, then, yeah, I guess we're trapped in a system where people are just slaves to whatever politician comes along promising things to get into power. I think until we stop defining ourselves as the electorate and start thinking of ourselves as people interacting in communities, communities of interest that we create, then the game is lost. It's not even the right game. It's like playing checkers while someone else is playing Monopoly and trying to merge those games together. If they get you to think of the game as Monopoly instead of checkers or whatever game you want to play, maybe this is a strange analogy, but I hope you get the point. They've got us thinking in the wrong terms about the wrong things, and if they've got you looking for solutions in the wrong places, yeah. Then you know, who cares? You are enslaved in your mind.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that Trump had a background, historical association with the Democratic Party. He ran as a Republican, and he was roundly rejected by the Republican establishment, and the Democrat establishment has still no love for him. Is it reasonable to sit back and say that Trump is a third-party candidate who, by a kind of extraordinary miracle, it would be some people's description, but something extraordinary happened where a third-party candidate managed to capture the Republican nomination? I mean, technically, he's not a real Republican, and the evidence is that the at least the establishment, Republican establishment, didn't want him. So what have we got here? Do we have a third-party candidate in the White House?
Yes. I mean, there is certainly that sense, especially when you put it in the context of him running on the Reform Party ticket in 2000. So it's literally what was a third-party candidate has taken over the Republican Party, in a sense. Yeah. So it certainly isn't within that Republican-Democrat dichotomy. That Republican-Democrat dichotomy and the way it's functioned for decades has been shattered. And we have yet to see how the pieces of that will sort out and what it'll look like, but it will not look the same. So that is some reason for perhaps some window of opportunity / optimism. But I think rather than framing it as third party, I would almost prefer to say non-party, because I am not convinced there is any ideological affiliation behind Donald Trump or his plans such as they are. I think it is about being in the moment and what can be on each issue, what can or cannot be done, which, hey, maybe that will be a better governing style for people who are concerned about how people govern other people. But I don't think we can fit that at all into the two-party system as it's existed for decades.
Then do you see Trump less of an ideologue than you do as just a technocrat who has a certain amount of expertise to bring to the job?
It is, in a sense, yeah. I'm not sure I would use the word technocrat, but but certainly that is, I think, a closer approximation. I don't think this is someone with a political ideology per se, but he does have certain political ideas that he has expressed time and time and time and time again for decades, which I think we should take seriously. One example of that: healthcare, universal healthcare. He probably will scrap Obamacare, but I'm assuming he's going to replace it with Trump Care. He has talked over and over and over throughout the years about being on the side of universal healthcare. He wants universal healthcare. I think he's going to make it happen. I think we're going to get something very similar to Obamacare, but it will be under a different name. So those types of things, again, I think people are going to be surprised when they see it's quite opposite to what they expected.
When we return, we're going to take a break for a couple of commercials in a few seconds. When we return, we're going to start talking about globalists versus nationalists and where the world is turning right now. We're maybe moving away from globalism and toward nationalism. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Is that a dangerous thing? I'm Alfred Addis here with James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Would you take me back to school? I need to learn the golden rule. Won't you lay it on the line? I need to hear it just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, make me feel it. Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com, and we have been talking about the election, and I was going to move off into globalization versus nationalization right now, but maybe we want to talk about riots. Is that something we want to talk about, James?
Well, I mean, we should at least acknowledge the phenomenon. It's obviously happening as we're recording this, so who knows, you know, where this story is going to be in half an hour, let alone a couple of days. But yes, we have seen massive protests happening in various cities, obviously a lot on the left coast, not surprisingly. And as we're recording this, apparently people have been shot in Seattle during an anti-Trump protest. So this is exactly what I have been worried about with the programmed hate, and why I think it's important to have the message of only love will win the day, will see us through these times, because unfortunately we're heading into potentially very, very, very dark times right now.
We're talking about the political division and great polarization in this country. We're talking about divide and conquer to some degree, aren't we? And you're suggesting that to avoid that division, you actually have to start loving your fellow man and woman, whatever.
The fellow man and woman is not some sort of, you know, troll from another planet. It is human beings who maybe you disagree with them, maybe profoundly disagree with them. But if we start treating them as political obstacles. This is the problem with the political game. You have half the population warring with the other half over who will have control over the country. And when your half doesn't get what it wants, it starts to get angry. And that just ratchets up and up and up, so that the whole political game is just a way to keep half of the population at the other half's throats. Look where that gets us. Look at what that actually accomplishes. I wish there was some way to easily put the brake on all of this, again, the message has to be one about love and understanding more so than hatred and division.
Do you think these riots, multiple riots, do you think these are erupting spontaneously in different locations, or are they being fostered by external forces? Say, we need a bunch of riots right now. Let's have one in Seattle and one over in wherever in half a dozen cities. Are they being orchestrated, or is this coincidence?
I do not have any data on that, so I can't say definitively. I can say that if we go by recent events, not only in the United States, but in a lot of different places around the world with the color revolutions and what have you, we know there has been outside influence in these protests time and time again, but also in Ferguson, for example, where Soros was paying to bus in people from other places in order to swell the ranks of the protests. So I think we would be naive to think that is not happening, or even if it is not happening right now, that it will not happen, that this will not be amplified by people who are looking to stir that pot. And again, this plays into so many different agendas, but if you want the militarization of the police state, what better excuse to do so than by cranking up the problem so that the only solution is, oh dear government, won't you come in with your militarized police state to save us?
Do you think that Trump could have anything to do with this, or is he so far away from the establishment it's not his business? I'm sure that people, and what I mean by that is this, you're implying that there are forces in government that would like to set up a police state, and of course they've been doing it for some time, but they'd like to increase that. Is Trump one of those people?
Yes, I think so. I think he has authoritarian tendencies, and I think that is established on the campaign trail, where he was talking about how he wants to implement the death penalty for people who shoot police officers and things like that, which, again, I don't take it seriously as a political policy proposal, because there's no way that the president has any ability to do that. He cannot instate the death penalty for certain crimes with a wave of his hand like that. But I think it shows the underlying tendency and the fact that he wants to get people like Snowden and whatever. I think Snowden is a psyop in various ways, but still, the sentiment is, you know, these leakers and people are horrible people. We have to cage them and jail them, unless, of course, it's Assange who's helping me out, in which case that's all fine. So I think the authoritarian tendencies are there. I don't have the impression that Trump is part of some coordinated plan, like with the Soroses and whatever, those types of forces. I think it's just his authoritarian nature. The coordinated planning comes from the schemers, I think, more on the New World Order side, however you want to frame it, who see the chaos and see the reaction to the chaos as their way of gaining more order and control over society as part of a planned agenda to move into that more centralized control.
Speaking of George Soros, I published a link to a video of Soros being interviewed about 3 weeks ago on my blog, and Soros looked to be an old, fragile man. He was kind of shaking. He looked like he wasn't fully in control of what he was saying, and he made some extraordinary admissions. He admitted in that video that, first off, he admitted that Hillary was going to lose by a landslide, even though she's his candidate, but he went on and said that they had people in the Electoral College that essentially they'd bought and paid for who might rectify that problem. Do you think the Electoral College is likely to give us a surprise and wipe out Trump's victory and hand it to Hillary?
I do not expect that to happen. If it were to happen like that, can you imagine the reaction?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if some outside influence was looking to create a civil war, That would be the shot heard around the world. There's no way that you could put that easily back in the bottle. So I don't expect that to happen, but if the forces of chaos want chaos, that would be a great way to bring it about, wouldn't it?
I would say so. I've got an article here from Yahoo News quoting Deutsche Bank, which is interesting to me. Deutsche Bank is more in the news since it's gone bankrupt, or is technically bankrupt, than it ever was while it was solvent. But the headline is Bye-Bye Globalization, and one of the bank's strategists, you see, writes, the world has been on a globalization trend since the end of World War II, but looking at the evidence this year, there is compelling reason to believe that globalism is dying. All right, globalism, I'm going to guess, is dying because global free trade is dying. We're in a global, something like at least a global recession, and arguably, from my perspective, a global depression. People are going to disconnect from other countries, in part perhaps to blame other countries for their problems. If we're going from globalization, are we headed to nationalization? And is that nationalization dangerous to us? Is it just a natural part of life? Sine wave, ebb and flow, up for a while, down for a while? Or is it dangerous to us? Do you see nationalization as dangerous?
It's not, it's not as simple as that. We have to look at the bigger picture of what's happening here. I think this is a repudiation of globalism as it has been proceeding and as we've seen it developing since the 90s with the WTO and what happened in Seattle and places like that, where you had clearly this open conspiracy, I guess we could call it, where the leaders and people in positions of power go to these enclaves at G20 meetings and what have you to hammer out how globalization is going to proceed behind closed doors in concert with each other in ways that the public has no ability to interact with. And they keep saying, oh, it's for the best, it's going to make a better prosperous society, whereas people continue to get laid off and feel the effects of that. So this is a repudiation of that. It is it's a big mandate to tear up the TPP, for example, which, again, I would expect that Trump will do, but we'll have to see. But that, and to the extent that that happens, that is a good thing. But as always, it is a question of what is that replaced by, and what is the ultimate effect of that? We are heading into an era of more protectionist policies, and there are short-term benefits and gains that we will see about that. I mean, it's way, way, way too early to be talking about the markets and what this means and things like that. But we have seen, for example, industrial stocks going up after the markets digested what was happening and the futures plunged. But now we see the market rally, and we see, for example, industrial stocks going up on the expectation that, well, he's going to do all these protectionist policies that are going to help American manufacturing and industry. So let's invest in that. And that buoys and there's an upward pressure on wages and things. So this is all good. But let's look at the bigger ramifications of this. A couple of things come to mind. One is that the 1930s were a time of protectionism and basically the grinding to a halt of global trade and beggar thy neighbor type of devaluation policies were going on. And that really was part of the key buildup towards World War II. That is something to keep in mind. The other thing is we've been talking about this over and over for years. We are living in the central bank bubble. It has been going on since the Fed started its bailouts and since the 2008 crisis. They've been pumping in all of that money to keep stocks up, to keep bonds down. We have seen the bubble. We are living in the bubble. The bubble cannot, by definition, cannot last forever. It will crash. If you bring in these protectionist and nationalist policies and the bubble pops, guess what's going to be blamed for it? It's going to be these policies. So that's something for people, even people who are in favor of these policies, to think about. But there's the bigger, bigger picture, which I always look at, and that is that I am not against globalism per se. It's not globalism. It is not because that puts it into a dichotomy. It's globalism versus nationalism. No, I'm against collectivism. And there are two subsets of collectivism. There's globalism and there's nationalism. They are both collectivist mindsets. So at this time, when people are looking for solutions, I hope that they will go back and ponder some things that have been talked about with regards to nationalism and how it is a dangerous collectivist ideology. And one example I'll point people to, George Orwell's Notes on Nationalism, where there's a lot to ponder in there, including where he said, had that famous quote, "The nationalist not only does not disapprove of atrocities committed by his own side, but he has a remarkable capacity for not even hearing about them." It's more of the team mentality. Our team, great. That team, bad. And that is a dangerous mindset to be in, whether that's happening with political parties or whether it's happening with nation states or in whatever box people are putting themselves in. It disconnects them from what is really happening, and it makes them support things they otherwise would not support.
I've only got about 3 minutes left, but I've got a question here about external threats. There are rising tensions between NATO and Russia. Are those tensions caused by simple Russian aggression, or does Russia need an external threat to hold Russia together? Is Russia under enough economic and political internal stress that they need a foreign boogeyman in order to hold Russia together?
Well, I, for one, am disgusted that the Russians put their borders so close to all these NATO bases. Clearly, what we're seeing is ramping up of the military threat from the neocons, neolibs, warhawks in the American establishment to a ridiculous degree. And I hope that is the first short-term, immediate change that we will see with this Trump presidency, which is a ratcheting down of that talk. I really hope that does take place because it is ridiculous. But you bring up a good point, which is often missed even in the alternative media, which is that that type of existential threat from NATO, it certainly does have a political use for people like Putin, who is vastly, wildly popular in Russia, largely because the Russians feel, and I think it is an understandable feeling given the overall political climate, they feel an existential threat from NATO, who is threatening at their doorstep. So what happens in those times? You rally around the flag, you rally around the president. There is a political benefit that Putin reaps from that, and I'm sure he's not oblivious to that fact. So it does, like all these military conflicts, it always helps the centers of power to ratchet them up in different ways. Let's hope, and I don't put a lot of emphasis on hope and change, but let's hope that there really is a ratcheting down, because that does not benefit anyone in the general population with these ridiculous militaristic statements that have been made in recent years.
We've got rising tensions between NATO and Russia. It might serve Russia's interest to see those, to create an external threat. But what about European leaders who worry about Brexit tensions within the European Union that could cause the European Union to disintegrate? Does the European Union need an external threat to hold the EU together?
That's one of the factors at play, but I think the European Union is about to face, there are elections coming up in a number of core EU countries that could see similar phenomena to what we've been experiencing. We're seeing the changing of the political landscape, how politics have been functioning. So I'm not sure the same old boogeyman warmongering in the same old ways will work to rally people in the same way as they have before. I really hope there's been a change in that, because that is obviously not the way we want to continue to proceed. Question is always what comes along to change that, or to change that calculus, and we'll have to see if the world becomes more peaceful. And if so, let's all rejoice.
If both sides, NATO and Russia, Europe and Russia, if they both need an external threat and they're both pointing fingers at each other, does that increase the possibility that this will degrade into real war, and you've only got about 10 seconds to answer?
Yes, if that's the game plan. But there are people within the hierarchies on all sides that also do not want that and are trying to steer it away from that. Let's hope that they win in that particular battle.
All right, James, thanks very much for your time. Thanks for your answers, insight, intelligence. We look forward to talking to you again in 2 weeks. I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Todd, the producer, and James Corbett.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.